Earlier this week, five Dillingham community members converged on a local church on a sunny afternoon. And let's face it, we've had some dandy sunny afternoons this week. The church was selected because it has a lot of space and a lot of tables necessary for the task at hand. The individuals selected were designed to represent something of a slice of Dillingham citizenry. They were people who would be fair-minded and give due diligence to the task at hand. The event is an annual event and seems to happen the first week in March each and every year. Or, at least that's been the case for each of my nearly 13 years working for Togiak Refuge. A part of that could be that I've been the guy organizing it, but it's also due to a deadline that's been pretty consistent year in, year out. Today, I'd like to talk about the process leading up to the event I've just described, as well as the event itself and the outcome. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. The event of earlier this week was the local judging for the Alaska Migratory Bird Calendar Contest, an annual event that's been happening across rural Alaska since the mid-1980s. It's an event that's seen some change, though a lot of the details have been pretty ironclad across its history. Again, I'd like to share a bit about it today. The Alaska Migratory Bird Calendar is just that, a calendar. But it's also more than that. It's a very effective conservation tool that imparts knowledge about Alaska's migratory birds, as well as critical messages when those are needed. Students from kindergarten on up through senior year can choose to enter the poster contest or the literature contest. We have both. Work for the contest typically happens in December and January. The deadline to enter has always been during the second week of February. There are two levels of judging. Each refuge has a local judging event. That's what I described in today's introduction. Winners of each local event are sent to the statewide competition, which is held in Fairbanks. Winners at the local level receive ribbons and prizes for their efforts. Winning at the next level, at the state competition, gets a student even more prizes and ribbons, but also is what it takes to have their work appear on the calendar. I've been a part of the calendar for a lot of the years that it's been around. It was something we did in my class during January of 1992, during my first year teaching in Alaska, and it's something I encouraged my class to participate in for each year that I taught in Alaska. For the past 13 years, I have promoted the contest as an employee of Togiak Refuge, so I've seen it from both sides of the fence. In fact, because of the time involved, it's one of the job duties for which my position was created. It's a job duty I very much enjoy. Every year has a different theme. This year's theme actually has two angles to it. The first was a message of tying migratory birds to their importance as a subsistence food across rural Alaska. The wording for this year's theme is Hunt for the Future. Tied to that, there was a focus on a specific species, the emperor goose. Many of you know that hunting seasons for this species reopened in 2017 after a 30-year hiatus. Because emperors are more susceptible to dangerous drops in population numbers, choosing them as a focus was merely an attempt to keep people informed as hunting seasons become the norm again. How the contest timeline usually works for me is a theme is chosen by a committee in the fall, I decide how I want to present information sometime in late October, and then I visit with classes in December and January. Or I should say, we visit with classes because I do get some help from other staff members. Villages that can take part in the Togiak Refuge contest include Quinnahock, Good News Bay, Platinum, Togiak, Twin Hills, Manicotic, Clark's Point, Alecknagik, Ekwok, New Stew, and Koliganik. Not every school participates every year. I think the most we've ever had during any one year was 8 different schools. For the local judging event, such as we had this past week, 5 judges select 3 winners from each of 4 grade categories, kindergarten through 2nd, 3rd through 5th, junior high, and high school. In theory, this means we send 24 local winners to the state contest, and some years it actually does pan out like that. However, it's not uncommon that a category goes without. This year, for example, we received no high school literature entries. This year was a little more spread out, which maybe made it a bit easier on the judges. What I mean is, no single category had more than about 60 entries. There have been some years where a single category might have well over 100 entries, and from that, the judges have to whittle it down to just 3. Still, irrespective of the total number for each category, it's not an easy job, and this year's judges, in my opinion, did a mighty fine job. I'd like to give them a big thank you by name right now. John Diasek, Lori Goodell, Marianne Dickey, Aileen Walsh, and John Corbett. Thanks to each and every one of you for your time. So, what's left? Waiting for the statewide results, which will become known early next month. Then, it's on me to get busy and get prizes ordered and delivered to schools. In a normal year, it seems like Togiak Refuge will score something like 3 to 6 statewide winners. Last year, in addition to a total within that range, we also had the statewide grand prize poster winner, something we've been fortunate enough to have done a handful of times over the past dozen years. I'm going to hold off on naming local winners just yet. I'll announce those names a few weeks down the line, when I can also share if any were selected as statewide winners. To everyone who competed this year, or had a hand in the contest, students, teachers, parents, and administrators, thank you very much. Shifting gears just a bit, let's talk about a bird, albeit not a migratory one. As with many topics on this show, the relevance comes from happenings in my own life. I've been very vocal about how much I like birds, and in particular how much enjoyment I get from feeding birds around my yard. Typically, winter is great for business, so to speak. Birds are very eager to find food sources, and as long as I keep the grub coming, they'll keep showing up. That said, let me tell you something that can be bad for business. Merlins. Are you familiar with merlins? Merlins are small falcons that are area residents for pretty much the whole of the calendar. I say that they're small falcons. As always when talking sizes, numbers can help. Merlins are about 10 inches long, with a wingspan of 2 feet and a weight of 6 or 7 ounces. In terms of appearance, they are mostly shades of brown or grayish brown all over, with a lighter colored chest and belly. They typically have some brown streaking on the chest and belly, and the tail is long and banded, and they have a faint vertical bar below the eye. The legs are yellow, the bill is gray. There are a few subspecies, but taken as a whole, merlins are found across pretty much the whole of North and South America, except for extreme northern Canada and Alaska. They're not one to see a good nest go to waste, and as such, do not build their own nests. They like to reuse the abandoned nest of other birds that border semi-open habitats. They like nest with a commanding view of the area around the nest. On occasion, they'll nest in tree cavities or rocky openings on sheer rock faces. The female lays 4 or 5 eggs that take a month of incubating to hatch. Merlins eat mostly small birds, which was recently the issue around my yard. I arrived home one day from work to find the yard fairly littered with feathers, and a merlin perched very close to the feeders on my porch. Over the next week, we saw him several more times. My wife witnessed him on a dive and miss at a grosbeak, and we sometimes found more feathers. For a number of days, our yard went lacking for birds at our feeders. Merlins catch what they eat by picking them off mid-air during high-speed dives. We have only seen the one at our place, and I mention that because where large flocks of smaller birds are found, they have been known to show up in pairs and tag team, with one merlin flushing the flock in the direction of the other. Since last weekend, feeding has, more or less, returned to normal as far as winter songbirds that hang around our yard and feed on what I put out. So perhaps the merlin has moved on. While merlins are really cool birds, and I like really cool birds, I'm happy enough to see this one gone. Again, it was bad for business. And where songbirds are concerned, I much prefer it when business is good. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.